Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Talking to Death is released every Friday and brought to you absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back. Mike.
Where have we been?
We did take a very last-minute trip this weekend. Four up and vanished, actually. And I think that it was a very successful mission, and you'll learn more about that soon.
Top secret.
Top secret, baby. Instead of having a conversation about the episode, which the episode was basically a conversation in itself, just to not leave you hanging, here's the teaser for the next episode of Up and Vanished. Going into this season, I told myself I need to step out of my comfort zone and do whatever I can within my legal and own moral bounds to help find the truth about what happened to Florence Akpialik. All roads led to a man with the nickname Oregon John. He's got a very bad rap sheet, charges that include assault, sexual assault, and cruelty to animals. And as far as we know, Oregon John is the last person to have seen Flo alive. In an effort to find the truth, I catfished Oregon John on Facebook, pretending to be someone else. Our conversations on Facebook Messenger eventually led to an in-person meeting at a bar in Ketchikan, Alaska. I met John face-to-face and pretended I was somebody else. And over the course of about 2 hours, we learned details that in my mind seemed to paint John as an even more suspicious character. He had a bad answer for everything. In his own tall tales about how Flo was murdered by another man and put inside a barrel under a meth dealer's house in Nome. Was John actually telling the truth? If he was, he made no effort in telling the authorities this, something pretty basic to do, especially if you're considered a suspect. Instead, Oregon John fled Nome, and he's never stepped foot back there. Upon meeting John in person, arguably my biggest fear in the moment, was whether or not John believed me. On more than one occasion, during our conversation at the Ketchikan bar, John mentioned that a podcaster was investigating Flo's case. I'm pretty sure he's talking about Up and Vanished. Through my own deductive reasoning, I surmised that Kelly, not her real name, the woman who had texted people about Flo's murder, had somehow relayed to John that this podcast existed. It's my belief that John was likely made aware of this podcast the day before I met him, but he didn't do his research. And though admittedly he was a little dubious about who I really was, he'd already taken the bait. Had he simply Googled Up and Vanished, he would have seen my face immediately. And I doubt our bar meeting would have ever even happened. But it did. And I think that in that moment, John fully believed that I was who I said I was. But the whole thing is a complex mind game.
But part of me wants to, like, play with fire. There's no rule book for this. There's no blueprint for how long I keep this ruse going.
Did he know who I really was? And just met me to try to discreetly clear his name? Well, if he did, he failed. And none of what he said seemed to redeem his character at all. I tend to believe John may have had his suspicions about me, but his own narcissism got in the way. And on the off chance that I was in fact this podcaster, he probably believed he could talk his way out of this. But he failed. Instead, he walked into my trap, and he exposed his true character.
the clock is ticking because sooner or later, just about anyone can figure out that I'm doing a podcast about this case. Is there value in seeing how he reacts when I tell him that I tricked him? There's a little bit of a danger element there I'm kind of worried about, to be honest.
What are my options here? I can keep playing along as this catfish, but for how long?
Maybe he smartens up. Or maybe he just shows us his true fucking colors. I almost want to take a bolder stance here. It's just unknown territory. But if I just pull the cat out of the bag in front of him, this guy is the biggest, most annoying enigma.
Do I push Oregon John even further? Do I continue catfishing him? Or do I tell him who I really am?
If this guy became convinced that he was going down, I think he'd feel very threatened by that. That shit is concerning.
I went 2 months with no contact. Then I opened up my fake Facebook account and took another shot in the dark. He hadn't messaged me in 2 months either. What does that mean exactly? I took Andy's advice and I messaged him again as this fake person.
Okay, here goes nothing.
I said, I looked up that missing girl on Google, and it says they didn't find her yet. Did the FBI keep it a secret?
He read it. He's online right now.
And in no time at all, he read it.
He's typing.
He simply said, I don't know. Well, okay. Now what do I say? I replied and said, I feel like the Nome PD is in on it or something. I couldn't find anything about the barrel they found under the house. Are they the ones who found that? He read it, but didn't respond. I said, what you think? Read it, no response. Feels like the tone is changing a bit. I sent him a GIF. It's a black and white video of a kid from what looks like a 1940s movie just tapping his fingers, waiting. No response. Well, this is going nowhere. Let me send him a screenshot of one of Kelly's messages that mentions his name. He read it. Now my messages aren't going through. He blocked me. Classic.
Today's guest is a very talented Emmy award-winning journalist. This guy is not afraid at all to put himself on the front lines of pretty much every news story in the world. I sat down with him and talked about some pretty big true crime cases you've probably heard of, and even UFOs. His name is Brian Enten. And he works at News Nation. If you followed the UFO story at all, News Nation's been staying on the pulse of all things UAP. And Brian has a very interesting take on what these things are and where we go from here. So without further ado, here's Brian Enten.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course.
You're in your hotel room.
I know.
It's cool.
Glorious Orlando.
Yeah, looking out at the theme parks and
Just
beautiful Orlando.
Shopping centers and, you know, outlet malls.
Yeah.
Yeah. As much as you want. So this is your Brian Enten. You're an Emmy Award winning journalist, reporter. I want to talk to you about your career a little bit today. And
cool.
Firstly, how you got into all this?
Yeah, so I was in local news in Miami for quite a while. That's where I'm from, South Florida. And I started working at News Nation, which it was an upstart new cable news channel. And one of my first stories was the Gabby Petito story. So they sent me to Northport, Florida, you know, when she was missing, when Brian was missing. Basically just camped out there, camped out on the lawn for a couple months. And a
couple months?
Yeah, yeah. And
where'd you shower?
Well, we had a hotel. We had a Fairfield Inn.
Okay.
Close by. So we would go there and like rest up and shower. But we actually rented a spot on the neighbor's lawn because the police were keeping all the reporters. Sorry, I'm like jumping around.
No, you're good. Yeah.
The police were keeping all the reporters off the street there, and there was no sidewalk. And you know, like you can usually stay on the sidewalk as like a reporter. They can't keep.
But they were not letting you do that.
No, because there was no sidewalk. Okay. So, and it was like this kind of weird Florida. Speaking of weird Orlando, it was like a weird Florida neighborhood. There was no sidewalk. And so they basically like, we had nowhere to go. So luckily the neighbors were super cool. We ended up paying them to let us have a spot on their lawn so that we could stay there just in case like Brian came home, that kind of thing. So
right.
That's how I got into this whole like true crime world.
Okay.
Starting with that story.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
So when the Gabby Petito story first landed on your desk, what did you know at that point? Like, where was it at?
It was really early on, and basically they were missing. We didn't know much of anything at all. It hadn't gotten a lot of national coverage. I guess one of our bosses must have been, for some reason, sent us there, thought it was interesting. My first thought was like, because I had looked at Gabby's social media on the drive from Miami, my photographer Luis was driving, and I'm like, well, maybe this is like some kind of social media prank or something. Like they purposely went, that was my first thought. Like, maybe they're doing this as like a, you know, to get attention or something. And I thought like we'd be there for a couple days and they would be found and we would move on to the next thing and they'd be okay. But it just, you know, all the twists and turns started happening. And I like just kind of became obsessed with the story. Like,
how so?
Like, it was just weird, like being outside Brian Laundrie's parents' house, they wouldn't talk to us. Then we started talking to Gabby's parents and they were saying that Brian's parents were ignoring their calls. Like, it just didn't make sense. Like, why, you know, if they were both missing, why would Brian's parents not be communicating with Gabby's parents? And I just like, it just, it was like a, just a mystery. And I don't know. I just felt like I needed to stay at that house.
Did it feel like that at any moment something could happen? I mean, obviously, if Brian walks, if he goes home, the police will know, that you guys will know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we didn't want to leave. Like, because there was this time where we didn't know if he was going to walk in, you know, if they were going to show up. And then later on, there were like FBI raids at the house, which we didn't know were going to happen unless we just stayed there.
Right.
So we were really nervous to leave. Like, I don't know. My gut just said, like, stay at that house.
Yeah. And I mean, not too long after your coverage, it just, that case really gained national attention.
Yeah.
More so than a lot of cases I've seen in the past 5-10 years.
Yeah.
What was your reaction to that? And why do you think that was exactly?
I think it's because, like, she had a really, you know, interesting social media presence. She had a lot of videos. She had a you know, an Instagram page about their van life that I think people connected to. I don't know what, there was just something about Gabby, I think, that people, a lot of domestic violence victims felt a connection to. It just, from the very beginning, it just, it started picking up steam. Like, even for me, when I got there, I just had no idea the story would, like, impact me so much and change my life. But, like, there was just so much interest. Like, I think I had, like, 20,000 Twitter followers when I started. And, like, you know, within a month, like, hundreds of thousands, just like people were just like clamoring for information. Yeah.
Give me some. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, looking at that case, there's the infamous phrase now, you know, missing white woman syndrome.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to carefully talk about that because I don't want to, you know, disparage anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like that's probably a part of it. I mean, I think that, in your time as a reporter, do you find that certain listeners or viewers are drawn to certain types of stories that they either relate to or feel some connection to?
Yeah, definitely. And I think with Gabby's story, again, it was like moms connected to it because they saw like their kids and Gabby. And then once more details came out, like just so many domestic violence survivors connected. Like, we were outside the house. I mean, it was crazy, like, what was going on outside this house. Like, when we were just camped out there, like, people were just coming to the house from all over the country, like women who had domestic violence in their past, and just like coming to that house just to like come there. And then they would tell us their story. Just to be there. They just felt like they wanted to show support for Gabby's family. They wanted to pressure the laundries, thinking that they knew something. And they would come and be like, yeah, you know, I got out of my relationship. And they just like really connected to this story.
This was in Bumblefuck, Florida, yeah. Though, right? I mean, yeah.
People were driving there from, and it was hot. It was hot, swampy Florida summer. I mean, I was drenched in sweat all the time, and it was raining every day. And, you know, like, it flooded there. Like, all the there was like this trench next to their house.
You were just sticky the whole time.
We were sticky the whole time, mosquitoes. And these people would come out there and just want to stand around and like talk about, and I just realized like they had this connection to Gabby. It was really, and even I just saw Gabby Petito's parents here at CrimeCon, and we were talking about it too, and even they're like, you know, there was just something about the timing, and they can't even figure out like why it just exploded.
Yeah, I mean, it became a huge story that you just could not miss if you were anywhere near a TV or a radio or the internet at all.
Yeah,
it seemed like.
Yeah, no, totally. And people were just, you know, living that in real time, and just like the obsession that people had, and like they just wanted constant information. It was kind of overwhelming because, again, like I was, you know, I had been in local news, and then it's not like I had done a lot of big stories where there was a lot of attention, you know? So I was trying to put out information as quickly as I could, but it was, you know, some days it was hard.
After camping out for weeks, what was the next big thing that happened in that case?
So I'm trying to think back. I mean, they started searching the swamp. They got the information that that he may have been hiding out at the swamp. So then we would spend a lot of time at the swamp, which was like 20 minutes away. It's called the Carlton Reserve. So we'd go back and forth between the house and the swamp, talking to the families a lot during that time, trying to get information from police. Like all sorts of weird stuff happening at the house. Like, I didn't report on this at the time, but like the police put these hidden cameras like in trees and stuff because they thought Brian Laundrie might come in through the back.
Like trail, like game cameras?
You know, they were more advanced than that. They were like, and the FBI was involved. Like there were like these little surveillance cameras that we got pictures of at the time. But like, I didn't want to report it because if he was alive and I didn't want him to like not come back because I...
So where was this guy the whole time though? For real?
So it turns out he was dead. I mean,
the whole time? I mean,
well, we don't know the exact timing, but he, you know, killed himself in that swamp. That's where they found the body. We don't know exactly at what point though.
Were they able to determine at any degree how long he'd been there or how long he'd been dead for?
Yeah, it'd been a while because his body was decomposed. It was like bones.
So likely early on he had killed himself.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So there was this whole national search. People thought he was on, you know, hiking in South Carolina. And people thought he was all, there were all sorts of crazy theories, but it turned out he was dead for a long time, yeah.
So moving on to another story you heavily covered, this is actually earlier this year, there was a horrific story of four Idaho students that were brutally murdered in their house.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about how you first learned about that story and what you knew at that point in time?
Yeah, so it had it happened, and I had heard about it, and I was actually on vacation in Mexico, and I was like following it, like just on my phone, and really interested in it. And that was another one that was like a mystery, which always kind of like appeals to me, like, you know, well, where's the killer? Who is the killer?
Right.
A small college town on edge. And actually, Paige, who's here, we were texting about it, and she's like, "You should go do this story. Like, it's really crazy." So we, you know, where it happened in Moscow, Idaho is like not an easy place to get to. So it takes a while to get there, especially from Miami, but we went out there and that was another one where I didn't really know what to expect, but we ended up staying there for like, I think it was like 6 weeks too. Yeah. And that was cold. I mean, opposite, it was like cold there. I mean,
oh yeah.
We're outside that house.
You're too. Up there, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but just another one that, I just quickly became like obsessed with just because like no one knew who the killer was. It was just brutal. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like these kids were shot. I mean, they were all like brutally stabbed in their house while they were sleeping.
How does it even happen? Right?
And how does this person get away? You know?
Yeah. I mean, my first thought was this has to be someone who knows them or something.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how is he getting into the house? How is he murdering four people with a knife?
Yeah.
And just walking out the front door.
Yeah.
Like, what was your first take on who the suspect could be before we learned anything different?
I mean, the police on that one, it was frustrating because the police were so tight-lipped. Like, it was a, you know, kind of a small town police department. They gave some press conferences in the beginning, but then they just like shut down. So we didn't really know what to think. I mean, honestly, I had no idea who it was. There was no like little tidbits of information. Then we slowly started to get things, looking for the Hyundai Elantra. They put out the picture of that. But you know, we were just banging on doors every day, trying to figure out, you know, these girls were popular girls, you know, did they have a stalker? Like we were, you know, trying to figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it seemed like it was either someone who knew them because it was so personal.
Yeah.
Or it was a complete stranger who just chose to do this one time.
Yeah.
That being the least likely scenario.
Yeah.
But you know, if the suspect they have did it, then that is, which might be, you know, tell you why it would be so complex to solve or pin that guy down.
Yeah, it was weird. And a lot of people in the beginning thought it was someone who knew the victims, because usually like it is, like it's someone that, you know, is in the circle or whatever. And it's looking back, I mean, it's sad, like especially on social media, like there were so many people and names were used, mm-hmm. like the people who thought
just that, finger pointing,
just finger pointing.
I mean,
and like there was this one neighbor dude who like gave his DNA to like went to the police and like, "Can I please give my DNA? Like no one will leave me alone." Like someone on social media put out his name and then next thing you like, know,
I'll prove it.
Yeah. Even like Kaylee, one of the victims, her boyfriend was getting a lot of heat because, you know, a lot of people always think it's the boyfriend.
Right.
And I remember I went to Kaylee's house to interview her parents, and they lived in Coeur d'Alene, which was like a ways away up through the mountains. And when I got there, this is when, you know, there was still a killer on the run. Everything was very fresh. Kaylee's boyfriend was there with the parents. And I remember being like, "Oh my God, like the boyfriend's here." Like,
right.
Then I realized like the parents do not think this guy did it. Like,
right.
And they
told
me
totally cool with this.
Yeah. So, but you know, yeah. But I was like,
I'm an outsider. I don't know what's going on, but
right.
They're cool with this. Maybe that tells me something.
Correct. So I was like, okay, like if they're like the boyfriend's here chilling with them when I'm doing the interview, like, I don't think it's the boyfriend.
So did you leave thinking maybe he was less of a suspect at that
point? I did, probably. Yeah, like, just because I believed, I trusted the parents' intuition on that.
Right.
Why would they have him at their house when they're, you know, dealing with all this? But I remember it was just a really weird moment, and they were like, please don't, like, get him on camera, and we didn't. But I was just like, oh, this is so weird he's here. But turns out, like, obviously he had nothing to do with it, the poor guy, you know?
They eventually did arrest a suspect.
Yeah.
Tell me about this guy.
Brian Koberger. So he was getting his PhD in criminology, his history of criminology. He was studying at Washington State University, which is right over the border from University of Idaho, where the murders happened. It's like a 10-minute drive. He's been into crime and criminology his whole life. I mean, he got his master's in Pennsylvania in criminology, and everything we've learned about him, kind of a creepy guy. A lot we heard from a lot of women who had weird experiences with him. A lot of women thought he was sexist that were in class with him. But no history that we know of like violence or anything like that.
I mean, if this guy did do it, to me, it seems almost like a new kind of monster where he was obsessed with true crime in that way, and, you know, at some point decided to commit a crime.
Yeah.
And yeah, planned it out in hopes of trying to get away with it.
Yeah, it's creepy. I mean, you know, he had this like study that he did as part of his doctoral program where he was trying to get inside the heads of like crime victims and emotions. And so if he did do it, I mean, yeah, was it like this obsession as part of his, you know, study of criminology.
And let's be real, if he didn't do it, who else did?
Yeah, I mean, the case is sealed, so there's a lot we don't know, but mm-hmm. based on what has been released, you know, they've built a pretty strong case against him. His DNA was on the knife sheath, which was found inside
the house.
That's not good.
How'd that get there?
Right. Yeah. And his cell phone tracked around the house during the time of the murders, and his cell phone was mysteriously turned off during the exact time of the murders. So there's definitely, and that's just what we know. I mean, it's like, it's a super secretive case. Like, I've never seen anything like it the way they've got this gag order. So there's probably a lot we don't know that they've connected.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
With how big true crime has become as a genre and just in TV, film, podcasts, do you think that to some degree it may have a negative impact on some people's psychological state?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about this again because I wasn't like always a true crime junkie until a couple years ago, and I still don't. I mean, I'm just
what made you a true crime junkie? How did you determine that's what you were?
Well, I just mean like after Gabby Petito, we started this missing. We got really into missing cases, mm-hmm. like you mentioned earlier, like you know certain minorities and women and men not getting.
And y'all investigated a bunch of missing.
We have, cases, yeah, right? We have a weekly segment. So anyway, that's why I kind of feel like I'm in the true crime thing now because we do these.
Well, yeah, you definitely are. Yeah.
Sorry, but what was the question? I forgot. Oh yeah, like
just like the. I mean, do you think that all the consumption of this content can have a negative impact on someone's psychological state or their view?
Yeah, I think it can feel like, you know, there's a killer outside your room all the time, whereas...
almost like generating a paranoia that may not even be completely rational.
Yeah, because if you watch this every day on TV, mm-hmm. And, you know, you might think like, oh my God, this is normal. This, you know, whereas really...
Yes, every neighborhood walk, yeah, a dangerous one.
Correct. Or, whereas we're like highlighting a lot of the awful cases happening, but that's not happening every day or in every... city in America, you know? So I think, you know, you have to come at it with a sort of, you know, rational way of looking at it, I think.
How do you keep your head on straight when you're deep into missing persons cases, all this trauma or horrific murder? How do you stay objective and focused and report on stuff like that without it having any sort of toll on yourself?
You mean like making me sad or?
I don't know. Just any sort of, you know, human emotion or connection to it all. How do you kind of stay in bounds?
I mean, I try to look at it as a job a lot of the time. And mm-hmm. like, you know, you're just doing your job. You got to get the facts, you know, see if the victim's families want to talk.
Compartmentalizing it?
Compartmentalize, yeah. And usually like every big story we do that's really emotional and sad, like I'll have like one moment where I'll have like a release, you know, like it's usually by myself. Like, I don't know when it'll come.
Uh-huh.
Maybe like a
moment. You're not a robot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like something will hit me and I'll just kind of like let it all out. And then I'll just kind of go back to, you know, but I think the ideas of like, and Grant, I looked up to a lot of these old school journalists, you know, but, I mean, I think we can have some emotion. I mean, it's like, we're humans. I mean, you know, it is sad.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I agree. Yeah. You don't have to be some, you know, AI robot.
Yeah. And you're almost more biased pretending that you don't have emotion.
Like, yeah.
You know,
you're so unaffected by this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, it takes a toll sometimes, I think.
I want to switch gears for a second to what I'm selfishly the most excited to talk to you about.
Okay.
And I hope you have at least a tidbit of info for me. But I want to just break into it by asking you, are aliens real?
Yeah, this is another one that I didn't expect myself to get into. Like, I never thought I'd be covering UFOs so much. Look, and again, this is interesting because it's kind of like with the true crime stuff. Like, I wasn't an alien guy. Like, you know, probably 3 months ago, like, I'd never done an alien.
It was not cool back then.
No, yeah. So, like, I'm not, like, I really don't have, like, a bias on it, you know? But based on everything I've learned, I think there's something out there. I mean, I do. I think that the government knows something. I mean, there's clearly secret programs. What it is, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if aliens are real, but I think there's, I really think there's something out there that they know.
Pretty recently, there was a bombshell story that News Nation put out.
Yeah.
David Grush.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a ex-military whistleblower who had some very bizarre, just powerful claims.
Yeah.
What was your take on that whole thing?
So, you know, he's got all the credentials. I mean, he had like the highest level of top secret clearance because he was, you know, an intel official. You know, he was in the Air Force for a long time. You know, his representation, his attorney now getting him through this whistleblower process is the former inspector general for the intel community. So he had like all the credentials, like the thing that
he wasn't just
some dude. Yeah. And we like checked all this out before we put him on News Nation. And I just kept going back to like, why would he make it up?
What's the motivation?
What would the motivation be? And that's what you do with all stories, right? Like, because there's not always proof when you go interview somebody, but you just have to, in your mind, think like, you know, are they trying to play me? Is there a reason they would be lying? And it's not just David Grush. I mean, a lot of other high-level people have come forward, not all of them publicly at this point, but like these are the people who we, who our government has told the biggest secrets to. And they've admitted that. I mean, like they have the highest level clearance. They check into their background as much as possible. They do psychological tests. So like if they're trusting them with that clearance, like why shouldn't we trust them now with what they're saying?
Right.
At least that's the way I've been thinking about it, you know? I mean, I'm skeptical too of some things, but
sure.
But I think it's worthy of us talking about.
Could you just summarize, just on a basic premise, what his claims were?
Yeah, so he claims that that the U.S. government has a secret crash retrieval program, and that for decades they have had this secret program that has retrieved crashed spacecraft, essentially. Now, is it like the movies where it's little green men and, you know, a saucer? Maybe it is, but he won't give details because of all of this classification stuff. But, you know, is it just weird metals that they found that don't register on the periodic table? That's a possibility. But he says there is this program where they have this technology and that they've been trying to replicate it to use within our like defense department. You know, within the military, try to replicate the technology for defense, and that other countries are also doing the same thing. And that there's sort of like this secret Cold War happening to try to replicate that technology. That's essentially what he says.
But it wasn't just craft, right? It was also claims of bodies of some sort.
He calls them biologics, which again, it's like you could say bodies, and he won't clarify, is it just... You know, I don't know what to, I mean, goop on these metals that they found that have, you know, DNA or something.
Right.
That's possible. But we don't, he says he calls it biologics that have come along with some of these crashed craft.
I mean, obviously, this is an extraordinary claim.
It is. Yeah. Like some of my colleagues and I were like, if this is all true, like this is like the biggest story. Like we're just like doing this story. Like we kind of came at it like any other story, you know, like we're trying to vet him. We're trying to get and then I'm like, wait a minute. Like,
the implications here are pretty big. Yeah.
Crazy, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and he didn't have all of the physical evidence that you'd want to see or go through to back those claims up, right?
Yeah.
But he does say that he has dozens or more, I think he's said almost 40 different people who've told him this stuff over time. And I'm starting to think about, okay, I don't think that David Grush is lying. I think he believes this no matter what. So it's either that these 40 people were telling him lies and gaslighting him over a decade or more, which, you know, to what end? Like, I don't understand that fully. Or it's true. And what would be the motivation for them to convince this guy of something that is totally bullshit?
Right. And he says, you know, he was like doing his own little mini investigation when he started to find out about this and started interviewing people within the program. And he, like you said, he's got a lot of people who he's talked to, and he's already brought those people to the intel community, to, you know, the Marco Rubios, the people who have this secret access. So a lot more people have talked than we realize. But it just goes back to like, what's their motivation? And when we interview skeptics, a lot of them say what you just said. Like they don't believe David Grush's story, but they also don't think he's lying. Like they wonder, like, is this some kind of plant to distract us from something else that he's been told?
Right. Or he was told this to eventually say it to discredit something, or I don't even know what the end game there would be.
Right. And you can go down a real rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
Just mentally, if you start to play this, it's like, you know, it's kind of crazy.
There was a congressional hearing pretty recently. I actually went there. I flew in.
Oh, wow.
Were you there? Or
no, I wasn't there.
Okay.
No,
yeah. No. But you know, it was my first time ever being in a setting like that.
Yeah.
I was bringing cameras and recording equipment, and I didn't know if I was going to be let in with this stuff.
Right.
But turns out you can bring all that shit in there.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I guess that's one of our rights or something, right?
Yeah, I'm always like intimidated when I go.
Yeah.
There. There's all these rules and stuff.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. But it was so bizarre being in there and seeing these military officials in suits and doing the whole Congress thing.
Yeah.
Saying what they were saying.
Yeah, it was kind of like hard to believe. Like, yeah. And, you know, so it was David Grush, and then it was
David Fravor
and Ryan Graves.
That's correct. Yep.
And And I found, like, I mean, obviously what Grush had said to us in the interview and said to Congress was, like, kind of the most, like, juicy. But I found, like, what the pilots said to be, like, almost, like, crazier. Because yeah. Here you had evidence, like the Tic Tac video that the Pentagon ended up releasing themselves. And here again, you got these, like, F-18 pilots. And David Fravor was saying, like, he's also, like, not into UFOs. You know, like, he doesn't want to be sitting there.
Yeah.
And, like, why would they be making it up? Not to mention there is video. Like, there's real video of this stuff released by the government. So, like, even if you don't believe David Grush, like, it's hard not to believe those pilots.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Navy pilot who flies, you know, pretty much the most badass machines we have to date.
Yeah.
And that person's telling you that they saw something in the sky that spooked them because it shouldn't be there, or it's something that they cannot comprehend.
Yeah.
What it was. I tend to want to believe them. I don't, you know, I think that, you know, unless they were just seeing stuff all the time,
right.
Which doesn't seem like
when there's
the
video.
Case.
I mean, there's
and
video.
There's video, right?
Yeah. And they were told not to talk about it. And, like, you know, there's other people who say, you know, stuff was erased afterwards. And there's something going on. Like, there's just no way there's not. The government knows something. And I think that that they're just, you know, they're keeping it a secret.
And when you say the government, I feel like there's been a trope with, you know, UFO lore for so long where it's, you know, the government knows and they have alien bodies at Area 51 or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's this idea of, you know, the government as some big thing that's working in unison, which
right.
Clearly we've learned that's not how it goes.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's, if it is all true, then a lot of these people, maybe most of them, don't know if it's true or not. And so it would be some, you know, department that's hidden somewhere.
Yeah, that's what David Grush says, that it's a like a dark program, a dark secret program. So basically the defense budget is like massive. It's like more than 50%, I think, of our whole federal budget. You know, there's a lot of money that they can't explain where it's going. Like everybody knows that. They don't, you know, it's not like every dollar is accounted for. So David Grush claims that, you know, within the budget, there's fat there that goes to fund this, and that there's a we don't know which one, but that there's a private contractor, so not government, like some kind of private defense contractor that gets paid to sort of handle this. And that way it's, you know, it stays on the outside. That's what he says.
Do you think that if the government definitively said that they have scientific proof of extraterrestrial life and they've been coming here and for years and we have these spacecraft that are not from Earth, what are the implications, do you think, for just the modern American or just citizen in terms of how it may affect the way they view the world or their belief systems?
Yeah, I've thought a lot about that. Like, what if the Pentagon just put out a statement and said, yes, it's all true, or, you know, whatever. I'm curious what you think. Like, I don't know. Life is so crazy now, and like it all happens so fast. Like, you just see all this crazy
after
stuff.
After COVID, I'm like,
yeah,
who cares?
You see all this crazy. Like, honestly, like if there was a press conference tomorrow and they said, we want to let you know that we do have this program and we can't get into detail, but we've been studying some of these items that have crashed. Like, don't you just feel like everyone would freak out? And then 2 days later, it'd be like, I really don't think it would be that. I mean, it'd be a big deal, but I don't think, like, you know, the world would stop.
No.
I think most people are kind of like, yeah, there probably are aliens out there, you know?
Right. I feel the same way. I feel like if the president walked out on the White House lawn and, you know, really showed whatever he needed to prove that ET life existed and they had the proof and the evidence of it.
Yeah.
I think that the American public would, half of them would say, holy shit, I always knew it, or that's crazy. And the other half would say, nah, that's not true.
Yeah.
He's lying.
Well, that's the other thing. They might just not believe it.
Yeah.
And they
it's
just
part of some
they, you
bigger
know?
Conspiracy
yeah.
now. And I'm right. like, you know, I think we live in that time where people, and I don't agree with it, just choose to believe what they want to believe.
There is no truth anymore anyway.
Right.
Like, even if they said it, like, some people just wouldn't believe it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, but I don't buy that it's like, oh, the world's not ready. I don't know. I just think everybody would.
Yeah. Maybe my grandparents weren't ready.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that the younger generation, the generation younger than me, I think they don't give a shit at all.
I agree with
I think
you.
They're just like, yeah, sure, we always kind of thought that anyway.
Yeah, right. Like, let me scroll my Instagram again.
Yeah, anyway, you know? It's like,
yeah.
Are we going to eat later?
Correct. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That is what I think, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's not as crazy as, you know, people
might make it out to be in terms of how we'd react to
Yeah, because even with these hearings, I mean, when we first did the interview with Grush, you know, we did the interview and that was one thing. But now you've got this guy at a congressional hearing under oath. I mean, you can go to jail if you lie. And then you've got the two pilots with him all saying this really crazy stuff. And like people accepted it.
Yeah. And he's put himself at risk there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, he can go to jail if he's proven to be a liar there.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, it's just a whole just strange topic that's fun to talk about. And, you know, my team and me especially really enjoyed all the, really have been enjoying all the News Nation coverage of it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see if you had an opinion or thought on maybe why some of the other larger news networks may not report on it as much or as fast or as in depth.
Yeah.
And if it has something to do with maybe just optically how it may be perceived or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's been fun covering it in an objective way because like a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of the UFO podcasters and stuff who are cool, but it's like, you kind of know, like, they're believers.
Yeah, but like they believe no matter what.
Yeah, like, it's been fun, like, because the topic hasn't really gotten
that kind
of
coverage. How does a news person report
about that, and it's kind of been, like, it's been neat, and a lot of people have been appreciative of it. You know, we always have skeptics on, and it's not like we're just saying it's true, you know? And I've thought about like why the other big networks don't cover it. Like even the congressional hearings didn't get a lot of coverage from like, you know, NBC, ABC, CBS. I think, I mean, we're a startup at News Nation. So, you know, when you're a startup, you're looking for eyeballs. You're willing to take risks on things, cover things. The whole idea is to cover stuff that other people aren't covering because why would they watch us if you can get it on, you know, the station you've always been watching. So I think we were just willing to do something different. Whereas like if you're the New York Times or NBC and you've got your thing going, like, why are you going to freak people out about aliens? Like, let's just, you know?
Yeah. And clearly, that's kind of how I perceived it too, where this is a risk that you guys are willing to take. And I think you guys should take.
And it was a risk. Like our boss is like, when we did the David Grush interview, Ross Coulthart actually did the interview. I mean, we didn't air it for, I don't know how long. It was a while. Like we were sitting on, and it was like people were like, we were sitting on it for a long time, just trying to get more documents from him.
Yeah.
You know,
this was being talked about. This wasn't like, oh my God, that's so crazy. Let's go tell everybody.
No, we realized. And like our bosses also realized like we're, you know, we're trying to establish credibility as a new network. Like we can't just like put this on, like people are going to like, we have to really make sure we're not wrong here. And this guy isn't crazy or we're done. You know?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, for what it's worth, it hasn't been able to be proven untrue yet.
Yeah. I think by now, like someone would have said like something, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Do you feel like in your lifetime career as a reporter that you'll ever be saying the words that we've definitively, scientifically proven that ETs are real?
I kind of do.
Yeah?
Yeah, do you?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, if
I'd hope so. I hope I don't die before that.
Like, some report comes out from NASA and it's like, yeah, they've confirmed.
Hey, guys. Yeah, the James Webb telescope.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of people over here.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. No.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. It'd be cool, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of freaky, you know?
It's a little weird, but just because we've always been so used to the fact that it's just us.
I also think there's only so much that we can, like, I mean, just the way I always think about, like, ants, like, you know, ants are so small and they can't really see us, but we can see them. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure we're the ants for something else.
I totally agree.
Like, there's only so much that we can probably see and feel. And
yeah, actually,
you know,
I had an analogy very, very similar in my podcast called High Strange, where, you know, everyone always has the idea in their head, if there's aliens that exist, you know, why don't they show themselves? Why aren't they talking to us?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that seems a little narrow-minded to me, or a little small-minded. If you were to take a stroll in the woods and you saw an anthill, you know, would you sit down and talk to it? Or would you just say, oh yeah, that's them, and I'm not going to kick the hill over because that's kind of fucked up.
Right.
I'm just going to leave it there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They may be so advanced that it's
unless you're on shrooms, is what I said, and then maybe maybe you were talking to the ants. I don't know.
You're right, though. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that in our lifetime we definitively learn something, but it seems like every couple months now the universe gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
It's, you know, way bigger than we thought. We've been around for longer than we thought, and there's just so much space and potential out there for it to exist, even just scientifically at this point.
Yeah.
Whether we have the proof or it's happened here or not yet, I think science leans towards the likelihood of other beings existing out there somewhere in the universe.
Yeah, and I thought too, like, so many people talk about UFOs again, and there's so many people online. It's like, it'd be cool to see more actual research done. I mean, obviously, like, NASA does it, and there's some people at Harvard. But like, if they just dumped some money into this, like, we could probably figure it out.
Yeah. Just in closing, what's next for you and your career?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I just kind of fly by the seat of my pants, honestly. Yeah, like,
hey,
I mean, I never know.
That's respectable. We do something pretty similar over here.
I mean, I wish I've never been one like, oh my, I don't like, I need more goals, I guess. But yeah, just kind of like, you know, I'm still covering Koberger in Idaho. That's going to go to trial.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Do you know?
Well, it was supposed to happen like this month, but they just pushed it off. They don't have a date yet. I think it'll be probably a year or more.
Oh, damn, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll stay on that and just, you know, kind of, I do all sorts, like, I have, that's why News Nation is good for me, because it's like, I'm not in a box. Like, I do all sorts of different kinds of stories, you know?
Oh yeah, I wanted to add too, every time I see a, you know, talented reporter like yourself, I'm always like, when do these guys sleep?
Yeah.
Like, they're getting up at like 3 a.m. to go be on air at 5 a.m.
Yeah, the morning
show. Or do you go to bed at 6 p.m. every day? Or what is your schedule?
Yeah, I don't sleep that much. It's funny. Someone just on Twitter, like, was like, you always have squinty eyes. And it's like,
yeah,
because I'm just tired, honestly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun. Like, I try to sleep like some, you know, I run in the mornings. I try to get my mind off things sometimes, but like, I just get like into things, you know, I can't help it. I mean, you get it. It's like,
no, I get
you
it.
Know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's an adrenaline. You just want to keep, you know, investigating, looking into stuff.
Yeah. Eventually you always find yourself there again. I'm on the train.
Yeah.
I'm deep in it now.
Yeah.
And now I'm just, you know, on the flight looking this
exactly.
up and doing that and texting so-and-so about it. Right.
Yeah. And social media is so crazy too. Like, you get tips constantly mm-hmm. and you're like, even with Koberger, you know, like I was in Idaho. I got a tip that they found the guy in Pennsylvania. I'm trying to get to Pennsylvania. It's just so much to keep up with.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're just always chasing something. And yeah, that'll keep you awake.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. Well, thanks so much, man, for doing this.
Yeah,
it's been
thank
a blast.
You. It was
yeah,
nice
I appreciate
meeting
it,
you
man.
In person. Yeah,
yeah likewise.
Awesome. Yeah.
And yeah, let's buy you a drink or something later.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be here for the weekends.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Cheers, man.
Talking to Death is a production of Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts, created and hosted by Payne Lindsay. For Tenderfoot TV, executive producers are Payne Lindsay and Donald Albright. Co-executive producer is Mike Rooney. For iHeart Podcasts, executive producers are Matt Frederick and Alex Williams. with original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Additional production by Mike Rooney, Dylan Harrington, Sean Nerney, Dayton Cole, and Gustav Wild for Cohedo. Production support by Tracy Kaplan, Mara Davis, and Trevor Young. Mixing and mastering by Cooper Skinner and Dayton Cole. Our cover art was created by Rob Sheridan. Check out our website, talkingtodeathpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Talking to Death. This series is released weekly, absolutely free. But if you want ad-free listening and exclusive bonuses, you can subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to tenderfootplus.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.